Hello, everyone. Welcome to Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. So what is truth? It's interpretive. It's subjective. It is, I think most of us would agree, that there is such a thing as truth. It's the conglomeration, the putting together of facts into some narrative form that results in an opinion. It is just an opinion, nothing more, nothing less, as to what reality is in the moment that you're in. And generally speaking, as much as it is an opinion, it is subjective, but you can do that and should do that. And actually, for the sake of truth, I would state you must do that, encourage you. You must do that, or it's all going to be subjective. And you can get away with the subjective and possibly change a bit the reality for a while until consensus sets in. And what is consensus? You should always do that in context of some measure of validity. Some measure of not only validity, but if you did this over and over and over again, the scenario, ran it, actually literally experienced it, participated in it, you'd have pretty much the same outcomes, accounting for some either error in measurement or randomness every time you did it. Otherwise, what begins to happen is that you're left with trying to recreate or create, and therein recreate, for the sake of today's podcast, the truth. And it gets harder and harder to lie to yourself. I know it's very difficult sometimes to think of it that way because so many people do seem to be so good at lying to themselves. One, it does not seem nearly so difficult. But secondly, if you're again not objective, if you're again not going to set that against the context of some standard error, measurement of error and randomness so that you get some sort of notion of what is valid, what is reliable, taking into account, again, just you and your personal bias, then what good is truth if you can't identify it? Psychology Today, January, February 2024. To manage overload, think more flexibly. Certainly, I need some flexibility. To manage overload, think more flexibly by Ellie Yu and Darby Saxby, PhD. Imagine you're organizing a dinner party. You've spent all day cooking, and you're excited for your five closest friends to come over so you can catch up on each other's lives. The table is set, the candles are burning, and the champagne is about to be popped. Then you get a text. Two guests can't make it. How do you respond to your negative feelings? The answer could affect your mental health. Do you try to see the situation more positively by focusing on feeling grateful for the friends who can still attend? If so, you're engaging in cognitive reappraisal or reframing something in a more positive way. Or do you instead ignore or suppress those feelings of disappointment or sadness? This is referred to as emotional suppression. Or do you think about all the possible reasons why two of your best friends weren't able to come to your party over and over again? This would be rumination. Cognitive reappraisal, emotional suppression, and rumination are just a few examples of emotion regulation strategies, the techniques people use to manage their emotions. Research shows that certain emotional or emotion regulation strategies may benefit your mental health and well-being more than others. For example, cognitive reappraisal seems to lead to greater well-being and better mental health outcomes, while the opposite is true of emotional suppression and rumination. When you're confronted with a situation that is out of your control, like a last-minute dinner party cancellation, cognitive reappraisal is typically most helpful. However, cognitive reappraisal may not be as helpful when you can control the situation. Let's say you failed a midterm physics exam. You're feeling sad and you decide to use cognitive reappraisal to help reframe the situation. You might think, oh, the midterm exam is only 40% of my grade and my physics grade doesn't determine the rest of my life. This may all be true, but making yourself feel better about failing the test could lead you to feel less motivated to study hard for the final exam. Changing your use of emotion regulation strategies in this way to best fit the needs of the specific situation you face is known as emotional regulation flexibility. With this in mind, a research team has developed the idea of thinking threshold, which represents the point past which we're no longer able to think clearly because we're experiencing intense negative emotions that impair our thinking, such as feeling overwhelmed, panicky, hopeless, drained, or generally out of control sad. When you're feeling low and your thoughts are pushed past your thinking threshold, perhaps because two of your best friends can't make it to your dinner party, it might be helpful to call on body-focused emotion regulation strategies such as mindfulness, meditation, and breathing relaxation techniques. Alternatively, behavioral activation strategies could offer relief. Engaging in hobbies or activities, like exercise, that make you feel good until you can think more clearly about managing your negative emotions. Determining your personal thinking threshold can be tricky and may require trial and error. But when you can recognize that you've reached it and have regulation strategies at the ready, your thoughts can support you instead of paralyzing you. And again, to manage overload, think more flexibly, by Eliu and Darby Saxby, PhD. Eliu is a doctoral student in the clinical psychology program at the University of Southern California, whereas Darby Saxby is a professor of psychology at USC. This is in Psychology Today, January, February of 2024. Now, why did I begin with truth when we're really talking about emotional flexibility, or at least in that sort of thinking way? Flexibility, because I think the best thing to do or best way is not necessarily simply emotion regulation flexibility. The best way is to at least have a good bead on truth. Because until you get the truth established, then everything else is either denial or in defense, which is not maladaptive. And even as the article captures, sometimes you're just not ready to deal with it. And you need to do some things to distract yourself, as with mindfulness. Go out and exercise. Get your mind off of it. Put it away somewhere. Which doesn't mean you stop thinking about it, but you're processing it at less of a conscious level and hopefully let it sort of work its way out, the truth, so that you understand that, come to some acceptance of the truth, so you're not in defensive posturing, cognitive posturing, denial, sublimation, reaction formation, projection, all of those defense mechanisms. Then you can begin to reframe it. Then you can begin to think of managing overload through emotion, regulation, flexibility. Cognitive or cognitive reappraisal, emotional suppression, and rumination are just a few examples of emotion regulation strategies, the techniques people use to manage their emotions. And I am a big proponent of just that, cognitive reappraisal, cognitive restructuring, cognitive reframing. I think it is better than rumination, although attention and concentration can be important. Attention especially, to be cognizant of, to be recognizing of the need to do something, or at least in an alert sort of way, to make you aware this is not working. But to relive the failure, if it didn't work, it would be a failure, over and over and over and over again, hoping either for a different outcome or somehow in that, rehearsing that again and again and again, that you will make it different, have a different outcome through just thinking about it, doesn't work. If anything, it just continues to expose you to the failure. It does nothing but remind you of yourself failing, and it risks greatly self-labeling as a failure. Get all the facts, do a thorough analysis of the facts, look at all the contingencies, examine how you've put it together, empirically process, cognitively and then emotionally, the situation, so that you then, in that validity, reliability of ways, in that determination of what really is the truth, and even though that may not be the complete picture that you're after, it's not going to be the complete truth, it still will have randomness or some standard error of measurement to take into account, but it's the best tool that we have. It's empiricism, it's research methodology, it's hypothetico reasoning, inductive and deductive. And then, if you need to, until you get a chance to try again, reframe it, do so. There's hope and optimism. See it as, oh, well, I've made a mistake. Something didn't turn out quite the way that I desired it to. But the control aspect of it is that I could do possibly better. I have a mechanism of correction in hand that gives me a hypothetical sort of alternative. It's not quite a proven thesis yet. It's still hypothesis because you've not tested it. It may be large, major adjustments. It may be minor corrections, but you have some say over it. But absent the truth, absent the pursuit of truth, absent then the analysis, the reasoning, the empirical processing emotionally and cognitively, denial doesn't work because it's all avoidance. And what we have found is avoidance doesn't do much more than create more avoidance. So you can't just go to, and should you just go to then, such the emotion, regulation, flexibility, such the then the emotion regulation strategy or strategies, let it be temporary and only until you get a chance at whatever level, consciously, subconsciously, to sort of contemplate, not ruminate, contemplate, think about it, clear the cache, allow your brain to do some processing either through mindfulness, again, distraction, so that it does not continue then to, in that ruminous sort of dimension, remind you of just that, the failure. And unfortunately, it can be more than just situation and circumstance. It can be personality. Some people acquire a failure identity over repeated failures over a lifetime, maybe only because they were not taught a much more adaptive, constructive, positive, as the article puts it, approach. And And so for them, their default is going to be always, I failed again. Nothing ever works. And all that rumination is going to do is continue to reinforce and remind them of their failings and their being a failure. But if you're not quite in that rut just yet, and take some time, you're aware that you have this ability to reframe it. You have this ability to reappraise it. You have this ability to restructure your thoughts. You have this ability to sort of tamp down some of that emotional reaction, or at least mitigate that strong feeling of failure and fight or flight that goes with it. You're alert, you're aware, but you're not overdoing it. Then you get a chance to go back and reevaluate. Don't put it off, don't delay it, such that you then lose some of that impetus. Fight or flight is not altogether bad itself. You've got to do something. Failing a physics exam is not a good thing if you're a physics major or if it's a requiem course. But you can do something about it. But it always comes back to appraisal, getting the facts, taking in the facts, coming to some sense of reality. It's called reality testing, some sense of truth, so that you can then use that contextually to continue to work to the ultimate answer, which hopefully an ultimate sort of term, is a success. And that is to get all the facts put together, to understand it well enough to be able to apply theory to adapt so that you can succeed. Use your brain power. Don't be overwhelmed by your emotions. And in the meantime, keep encouraging yourself. Keep reframing it. It's not the end of the world. It's only 40% of my grade. It's not going to kill me. Everybody makes mistakes. But if you lead with that and don't do the truth seeking, don't do the empirical processing, don't do the thorough analysis, don't apply research, methodology, hypothetico, inductive, deductive reasoning, then you're going to obviously continue to fail because it's maladaptive. You might luck out sometimes. You might randomly make a good grade, but you're certainly probably not going to pass the course and or get the degree by doing it that way. You have to do something in a strategic way. That's what psychological counseling should be all about. Using the fullness, the entirety of this sort of model, the overall perspective of, yes, I can change my thinking. Yes, I can do a lot to avoid, run away from, feel like a failure, ruminate on my failures, think negatively rather than positively, even fall into, again, a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, it's going to fail, feeds into my, unfortunately, failure identity. But you don't have to. But you do have to get the truth. Then you can begin to encourage yourself by reframing. That's what we do in psychological counseling. That's what I do when folks come see me. I would presume most approaches have to encourage at some point, for the sake of adaptability, learning, growing, emotional growth, development of confidence, self-esteem. In that way, certainly virtue and character, not to the denial, not to the running away, not to the avoidance, but to the overcoming, answering problems. Isn't that why you come to see somebody for psychotherapy or counseling in the first place? I have an issue. I have a difficulty. I have a situation and circumstance that is presenting difficulty. I'm having a difficult time in my difficulties, adjusting, making the necessary adjustments. And I need some assistance because in my own head, I'm trapped. I can't get out of the ruminating. I can't get out of the fight or flight. I can't get out of the worry, the negativity, the failure, the self-condemnation, the doubt. I need some help. Help me see it most objectively. Help me, assist me in coming brainstorming, coming up with alternatives. Help me figure out how to implement them. Help me to find some positivity in myself. Help me to reframe it. Help me in that reappraisal to manage my emotions so they don't get the best of me. Help me to stay out of such the emotional thinking that I can't apply logic and reasoning because the two systems are contra to each other. While one's on, the other's off. Help me. And I'll be glad to. But it's all in support of you adapting. It's all in support of you laying claim, properly so, to the benefits of that processing, that development, that developmental milestone, that application, the sense of efficacy and accomplishment. And then sharing that with the world around you. Because you aren't the only one that's ever failed. And I'm sure there's a lot of individuals that have not done as optimally or as well as they'd hope to in either undergraduate or graduate school in pursuit of their college education, or even if it's not with degree in mind, whatever they've set themselves about as far as a purposeful, significant sort of task, milestone even in their life. I'm good at that. Not because I'm going to feed you lies or we're going to somehow move off of the truth, but we're going to rightly establish the truth, and then we're going to rightly establish that in that you can make adjustments so that we can dispel the myth that you're a failure. Overcome that negativism and that negative thinking. Will it be a lot of work? I hope not. Will we do it based in sound research methodology, technique applied, cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavior therapy, cognitive restructuring, even some applied behavioral analysis or behavior modification? Yes, we will. Will we do it in a friendly, supportive, patient-affirming sort of manner and methodology? Yes, we will. Will we do it with empathy? Will we do it with perspective-taking? Me to you as that person who's helping? Yes, we will. And because we'll do it that way, because that is, as best we can determine at this particular point, the best way to get there, to all of those things, particularly you leaving the situation feeling good about yourself and your life in a positive sort of way, then as much as that's what we know, that's what we're going to do, it'll work. It works. It's empirically sound. It's evidence-based. And that is what you want. Otherwise, it's just feeding the lie. And what's the primary error in all of this? Not ascertaining, identifying the truth. Because without that, then it's all going to be nothing more than trying to avoid lying to yourself, deceiving yourself to lessen. And there is again a time and place. There are again times and places where you have to do that, but you shouldn't live there. And that is going to be resoundingly the basis, or at least contextually, to the psychotherapy, at least, or greatest psychological counseling, that'll be the basis of it. You come here to determine the truth. You come here so that you don't stigmatize yourself with that sense of failure. And you leave here, hopefully, knowing how better to manage, to overcome a sense of, again, control, as the article put it. That's what we try to do with the podcast. Word with Dr. Michael David Clay is we try to help you or assist you. And maybe, perchance, you won't need to go to someone's office or do a telehealth visit. But should you, go to the Psychology Today website, and you're going to find a directory of vetted providers. You can reach out to me if you'd like. You can call 304-523-WORD, which is 9673. You can email me at drmdclay@thewordhouse.com. You can find me, or us, at thewordhouse.com. Or, you don't want to do any of those things. You can, with the exception of the podcast, you can come back, because we drop the podcast weekly. Once again, you're listening to Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. And until we get that chance to go over another article from Psychology Today, I want to wish you the best. I'm not only good mental health, but all of those things that that brings with you in life, or brings to you in life, with it to you in life. And hopefully in that you'll have a good life. Until we get that chance, though, I want to sincerely say thanks.